Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Live from the Ingrid Pit of Despair, it's A Wheezing Groaning Sound, the only podcast about the obscure British sci-fi television series Doctor Who. And today we're tackling the Time Monster. So now's as good a time as any to remind you that Wheezing Groaning Sound will be live at the King's Place in London as part of the London Podcast Festival on the 2nd of September at 9:30 p.m. Tickets at kingsplace.co.uk. But Tom, I hear you ask, what has our live show got to do with the Time Monster? Well, it's only one date, so I guess it's a bit of a minor tour.
Oh.
I'm Tom Titneenan, and joining me are John Manbury Rain and Paul Boobs Litchfield.
Hey!
Oh, this is exciting, everybody, because we're doing our first. You know how like Baywatch did a series called Baywatch Nights. This is the first Wheezing Nights. We're recording this in the evening, and I'm drinking alcohol.
So am I.
That's exciting. Mm. I haven't cracked into my Oyster Bay yet, but I'm going to a bit later, and we'll see what happens. I think I have a suspicion that because we record, spoiler alert, some of these in a row, that the third one might be a bit of a a bit of a free for all.
Yeah,
I think it might just be an hour and a half fight.
Yeah,
a pub brawl.
But before we get to that, we are today, as I say, covering the story The Time Monster. What else was on TV on the day that people were watching The Time Monster, Paul Litchfield?
Well, allow me to tell you, by the way, boys, love the show. The Time Monster came onto our televisions on Saturday the 20th of May, 1972.
Oh,
at a respectable, Paul, did you write it down? Perfect, at 20 to 6.
Oh, good time.
That's a beautiful time. Well, 1972?
Oh, yes.
That seems about right to me.
Fair enough.
Anyway, so unfortunately on BBC One, slim pickings. No television until 10 a.m. of course, and it started with an old favourite. We've covered it before. V-Bitte.
V-Bitte.
Yeah. It is German for beginners only. and then it immediately closed down.
Incredible.
And then and then we started again at 11:35. The Queen live in France, sounds fantastic.
Very European, I mean, this day.
I mean, does she do a piece to camera? We don't know, but
she probably did it in a B-day.
Yeah.
That, of course, was closely followed by Grandstand at 12:45, which ran until 5:05. And then it was the news, and then was Doctor Who, The Time Monster Part 1. There is blurb. It's not too bad at all.
No.
Masquerading as a research scientist, the Master is using a device called Tomtit. Sorry, let's just get this out of the way now.
Yeah.
Tomtit!
Yeah. I can start laughing because my dad, being a cockney, would always say, "Have you been for a Tomtit?"
Yeah.
It was rhyming slang for shit. So every time someone says Tomtit, I am laughing.
Yeah. Oh. But don't worry, folks, there'll be nothing ruder after Tomtit in this. Nothing rude at all. Jesus Christ. Anyway, masquerading as a research scientist, the Master is using a device called Tomtit to summon an ancient and powerful creature from beyond time. Now, that's a nice blurb.
Yeah.
Yes.
Tells you everything.
I'm glad I know what's going on in the Time Monster now.
Yeah, absolutely. Then there's nothing exciting. At 9 o'clock of the PM, you had a man called Ironside.
Raymond Burr.
Raymond Burr. Grr. And the episode's called "This Could Blow Your Mind."
Whoa.
And then the blurb is, "No one has ever succeeded in outwitting Ironside." And that's it. Oh. so we know that whatever this is, they fail. So fantastic.
That was just waiting for until now, but never arrived. That's amazing.
Until... Say, there's a mild Doctor Who connection with Ironside, isn't there?
Is there?
Well, yeah, because the only thing that will defeat him is stairs.
Hey! Very good. Very nice.
Thank you.
Have you ever seen a Dalek in a bath night? It's perplexing. Anyway, at 11:15 was a program called Julia Felix, which just called a program of her established favourites and one of her own songs, Windy Morning.
Windy Morning.
The morning after a curry.
Windy Morning.
I mean, is she literally farting? Is that what that is?
I think it's a prelude.
Windy morning.
It's a prelude to Tom Tit.
Yes. Tom Tit.
Do you have a windy morning, then a Tom Tit? Who knows? Anyway, on BBC Two, programmes began at a respectable 9:05 of the AM with Open University. Alas, no course information. Oh. Deary me. Which went on until 1 p.m. and then, of course, it closed down. Then it reopened again at 3 p.m. with Saturday Cinema. Ooh. A film called A Private Affair.
Doris!
Wait.
Okay.
An unlikely trio of army draftees become friends by singing about their basic training.
Oh.
Doris, you're fine.
Let's go to your mother's.
Up, sod it, I'll come with you. So that was Saturday Cinema. They sing about their basic training. I'm knackered, I really cannot do this. Anyway, and then at 20:05 was Look! Bird Watching Extraordinary.
Ooh.
Leslie Brown searches for birds in Africa. He is adventurous.
That's what it says.
He is adventurous. At 5:45 was The Television Doctor. What? Hang on.
Hang on, a different one.
This is going on BBC One. This programme is mainly concerned with blood pressure. There you go. That's that one.
Okay.
Mainly concerned. Just mainly. Yeah. 6 p.m. Man Alive. Hyde Park. What? I think this is a documentary. It just says, Hyde Park is rich with characters and eccentrics and then stops.
The person rowing it really died as he was typing that out.
That's obviously sod it. The wife's gone off with the bloody milk.
Clive, I know you're really ill, but would you be right to do one more blurb for us before you pop off to hospital?
Yeah, certainly. Hyde Park is rich with characters and eccentrics and...
And they come in the morning. Oh my god, I'm sorry everybody, Clive died last night.
Yes. His last words were
And at 8:15 was The Philpott File. The Mighty Mississippi. From Topsville to Bottomsville. Ooh. No more information about that. Then later on at 10 p.m. was Pets and Vets. It says this, for most people, keeping fish usually starts with a single go fish in a bowl. For many people, it ends that way too. That's like a very bleak U-turn.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And then finally on BBC Two at 10:15 was The Golden Bowl Part 3, which I think was a historical drama series. Episode 3, Charlotte. And it says this. Charlotte has married Mr. Verver and they spend time together.
Ooh. Very nice.
Ooh, imagine spending time together after you're married. Tongues will wag. And that was your visual feast on BBC One and BBC Two.
Blimey. Well, okay. Nothing really to distract you from episode one of The Time Monster. So let's get cracking. Let's get cracking with this. We begin, as ever, in media res. And the Doctor's having a nightmare. And you
he's tripping balls.
Mm-hmm. You can tell because they're crash zooming on puppets. Mm. And there's some magma and stuff.
Axes.
Mm-hmm. Terrifying axes that he just can't help but see. Mm. And he wakes up with a jolt and wants Joe to immediately find out if there've been any eruptions nearby, which there might have been during the night. We don't know.
Mm-hmm. It's all right. I opened the window.
Another windy morning. And he's been... So he's been working. He wants to know if anyone's found a crystal, because apparently 99% of all John Pertwee Doctor Who stories involve some kind of crystal.
Yeah, that he normally has to reverse the polarity on at some point. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, which is fine.
Hmm. It's worth remembering as well, in the dream, the master is massive for some reason. Never comes back. That never comes back.
No. Jungle is massive, master is big.
The Delgado is massive. meanwhile, speaking of Delgado, he's doing his classic ruse of pretending to be a professor, Professor Thescalus.
He's over up to his little tricks and again, and he's a little tinker.
He is. Mm. He's a cheeky little boy.
How long do you think, Tom, he's been establishing that sort of persona?
God.
Has he been bedded in for like 3 or 4 months?
I'm sure there isn't physically enough time for the master to have enacted all of his ruses. Because he's had to be a vicar in the demons. And he's always having to like put about 4 months worth of work into something, which goes wrong the second the doctor turns up.
He ran a small plastic factory for a while.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that was really boring. He spent like 3 months invoicing.
His CV must be brilliant, by the way. He stops being evil for a minute. His LinkedIn page would be a mile long.
Well, of course, everywhere the master goes when he starts, they go, well, listen, mate, you've got to do what everyone else does, so you've got to start right at the bottom. So you're cleaning the leads for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. It's a living hell of just like starting every job at the bottom.
I'm just off to go clean the lab. You could take over as professor.
I will shrink the turds, make my job easier. if you want.
All that little mouse droppings.
Lovely. Yeah.
But he's working in the lab, and he's working with Dr. Ruth.
Yes,
not that Dr. Ruth.
And Stu spends most of his time. Stu's a card, isn't he? You and your bloody women's lib.
Yeah. And he calls him Prof. Will you not call me Prof?
Yes.
It's like, is that Ace's like uncle or something?
Yeah.
that's why I ask, because I get the impression that like the master has been there for at least 3 months under this roof.
Yeah.
They're all just rubbing each other the wrong way, and everyone's just like, oh God, not you.
Tensions are running high.
Yeah.
Is he doing an accent here?
Yes, just subtly, but not well enough.
I thought he was being Scottish, and then the next minute I thought he was being Welsh.
Mm.
Then he sounded like Spanish, and I was confused.
Yeah. Right. He's got the kind of something going on, I thought. Maybe a Spanish... Yeah, something sort of lingering underneath.
I mean, he gives up after about 5 minutes. But yeah, he initially begins like that.
Yes. Everyone's convinced. So then, where are we at next? So yeah, they're at the... Is it the Newton Institute?
Institute, yes. Mm.
And so that's what they find. And so Benton is going to be tasked with going to the Newton Institute to find out what's going on there. Because that's what you do. If you want something solved, send Benton.
Send Benton. Tell you what, he's got a lovely through line in this, isn't he, old Benton?
Oh my goodness. He's got a proper police squad style ending, hasn't he, that we'll get to, obviously.
Yes, yeah. He's basically the end of Thundercats and the end of Squeezie. You prick.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the master is hypnotising the person in charge, because that's what he does whenever he's in a new job.
Will obey me.
Charles Percival. You will obey me. And so then, so Ruth and Stu, while he's away, they just decide to kick off with the experiment. And it works.
Mm. Yeah.
They shift the crystal or something. Is it a doorstop or something
It looked like some sort of thermos for a minute.
Right.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
They make the thermos move. Mm. Meanwhile, the doctor now, for God's sake, once you've got over Tomtit, once you're like, okay, Tomtit. They could have called it anything, and they called it Tomtit.
Tomtit.
Yeah. Then we see the doctor's little sort of, what he calls a time sniffer outer.
His time sniffer outer.
It's a Venusian time meter or something.
It's a cock and balls.
Was this story just like the writer continually winning bets?
Yes.
Like, no, I bet you can't get a cock and balls into Doctor Who. And then you're like, no, there it is.
The only thing I wrote in my notes after episode 2 was, I think this might have been written by Benny Hill, because he's got content. You've got a cock and balls, and you've got Bessie going in fast forward. You might as well strap a brow on it and it get being chased. Did Benny Hill write this? It's insane.
It's bad.
Saucy seaside carry on Doctor Who. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Especially with old Stu, who's got a bit of that kind of like, he says things like, you chow down on your posh old nosh. He talks like someone out of the Beano.
Yeah, yeah.
He's extraordinary. So yeah, so they are able to move that, and they do a weird dance to celebrate that that they've been able to move it.
They do a dance.
Oh, and another Benny Hill thing. There's a pervy window cleaner.
Oh yeah, he falls off his ladder. Yeah,
the window cleaner goes, "God, I bet they're getting up to all sorts of nicky in that Newton Institute." Yeah. A man so starved of physical attention, he'll actually climb up ladders to peer inside.
Didn't he have a bucket?
Yeah. No.
He might not have even been a window cleaner. He might be like a local pervert who heard...
Local pervert?
He heard the word tit. He didn't hear Tom.
I bet you got a Tom tit in a rune-shaped fucking machine in there. Doris! I want to be a window cleaner.
Because this is Terry Walsh, isn't it? The sort of stuntman Terry Walsh. I just don't think this is window. I think it is just Terry Walsh out of character, just practicing flinging himself off ladders.
I looked at his Wikipedia page and I found a phrase I'd never heard before.
Oh, yeah.
He said that in between stunting...
Oh, nice.
He drove a cab.
Wow.
Oh,
I've never heard
go.
Stunting before.
In between stunting, he enjoyed eating and drinking and walking.
And falling off ladders.
Oh. I thought stunting was like smoking cigarettes when you're really young.
Making That's you what, small.
Yeah.
Maybe he fed cigarettes to children.
It would be as good an employment as doing whatever he's doing up that ladder.
Yeah, smoke this. One day you'll be Sill.
Yeah.
Stunt your growth, mate. Look at him. Yeah. Oh, blimey. It's amazing. So far, we've got Tom Tit, a cock-shaped instrument, a worldwide panic, a randio bloody window cleaner, the master having a dance with his...
Yeah. It's all right. It's not like later on we're going to have a sort of a comically buxomed woman enter the scene as well.
Of course not.
So Stu's a bit of a character. He says, "All right, prof, go enjoy your nosh," which is like A-readers. It's a real Beano-type dialogue.
Yeah.
And that's when you realise when all the other people turn up, you've got Dr. Cook, who's like, "Hello, gentlemen. I don't care about anything." Because they find the window cleaner, who's fallen far, hasn't he? He's fallen like about 30 metres away from the building.
He should be dead.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's like, "Can we get someone to clear this working class man away, please?" And they just leave him there because he's not nice, is he, Dr. Cook? I'm sure that'll pay off later.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So they're doing the time sensor, but then they realise that they need to get to where Benton's just gone really quickly. So they get in the car, and as you say, they do Super Drive. It's called Super Drive.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Joe says, "We're not going to get there in time in this old thing."
Yes.
And he's like, "Shut the fuck up about my car." Press that button. And then they're going at about 400 miles an hour. She goes, "Is this safe?" He goes, "Yes, it's safe. I'll show you." And he brakes.
Yeah.
It's like, well, not convinced. Okay. And if a woman stepped out with a baby.
Doctor, you've been drinking. I'll be fine.
You want the driver after three pints. You want the tramp from the... from the Planet of the Spiders to come out after his first day of being a stockbroker getting run over.
or what he does is he sees the car going so fast he reverts back to type and goes back to being what he used to be and drinking again. Sod that. I love it when Joe says, "Are you sure this thing is safe?" And the doctor goes, "Oh, stop whiffling, Joe."
Yeah. Stop whiffling. Joe's like, she's happy not to have been flung through the windscreen. It's really sad. So they are getting there. The master arrives and starts shouting, "Come, Kronos, come."
Mm.
So hopefully we'll see Kronos in episode 2.
I can't wait to see Kronos.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you what, nothing is more frightening than the very visage of Kronos.
No. Absolutely terrifying.
What I like is the master finds out that all of UNIT, including the doctor and everybody's ever tried to do anything to, is coming. So he goes, "Ah, ha, ha, ha," and puts a radiation suit on so no one will recognise.
Yeah.
It's genius.
Genius.
So the master shouting, "Come, Kronos." Hopefully we'll see Kronos in episode 2. Spoiler alert, we don't see Kronos.
So if the master has spent the last 3 to 4 months carefully threading this evil, nefarious plan.
Yeah.
On that day, he's like, "Come, Kronos, come!"
He goes to pieces instantly.
Immediately to pieces. Just,
He's trying his best. So yeah, the Doctor arrives, and the main thing we find out, obviously Joe gets frozen for a bit, which is fun.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And then Stu becomes 80 years old.
Love it.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
It's fun, isn't it? So he's lying there in a weird room with lots of like half-made bookshelves and a big Elton John poster.
Yes.
which is a strange choice, but fair enough.
Yeah.
And he's recuperating.
Well, he's kind of passed out, isn't he?
He's like, his body can't cope with having aged so quickly.
Because they say he's nearly 27. He's 27 next week.
Yes, yeah. Which is shocking. I mean, like, I know people looked older in the past, but he's not a good 27 normally, so...
No.
But then the Doctor realises, then they go, oh, hang on, the Professor Vasculus, but Vasculus is Greek for master.
Yeah.
I mean, why go through that if you... Don't make it that obvious.
No.
I'm the Rastum. Hang on, that's master. For fuck's sake, come on. Just think a little bit. Master.
We don't mind you calling yourself the Rastum, but it's the fake dreadlocks hat you've got on that's really offensive.
It's the fact that you went half Rasta, half Chinese. That was weird.
It was weird. No one likes it. Stu rouses and shouts Kronos so loudly the camera fucks up, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And what happens there? Yes, and then... The Brigadier sends for Yates to bring the TARDIS and everything back to the offices, the research centre. Fun. Doctor examines the crystal, lots of crystals, and realises that he's trying to summon a chronivore.
Yeah, time eaters.
Time eaters.
Yeah. That's good, I like all that. That's
it's quite fun. And it's the crystal of Atlantis. Then the Doctor finds the Master's TARDIS.
Here's where he starts to go... We're going to go really weird now.
Yeah.
Someone should stand up and go, Atlantis, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm trying to help a window cleaner here.
And true to form, I think I must have had like British sauciness on the brain. Because next thing we do is we're in Atlantis and there's a little boy who I wrote looks like Robin Asquith.
Yeah.
who like says that people are coming or something, whatever they do in those kind of things.
Trying to have sex with a starfish.
No wonder it flooded.
Yeah. Well, the window cleaner will be out of a job, wouldn't he? Bloody hell, this will never get done. Or will it be constantly done? Ooh.
And yeah, so then Benton is tricked into leaving. Oh, by the way, the ruse by which the Master gets him... He gets... Firstly, he hypnotises the head of the company to get them all to leave. Then he highlights that he can do a pitch-perfect Brigadier impression.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic.
But it's Chekhov's ruse, though, isn't it? Because then he doesn't fall for Benton's look behind you.
Yes. Yes.
My dear Mr. Benton, that is the oldest ruse in the book. But that comes back later.
Yes, which is actually not a bad bit of writing, is it?
I like that.
Because he says you're in the soup without a ladle. Lovely bit of writing.
Yep.
Nice.
And then they start up Tomtit again, and the and your old fella turns up. The what's his name? I can't remember. I haven't written his name down. The old man from Atlantis.
He's just
yeah.
I'm the assistant of the plot, but not anything important to it.
I'll
hang around for 3 episodes.
Yeah.
And I'll be constantly amazed by things, even though I'm supposed to be some sort of god.
Yeah.
I've
just had a tomtit. It was amazing.
I pressed a button and he just flew away. It was amazing.
Would you be interested in my new invention, the bum crack? No.
It's the bohemian unit of measure.
Yeah. Which, by the way, you shove up your ass. All right. Anyway, poor old Benton gets knocked out, doesn't he?
He does, yes.
He gets flung between filing cabinets. It looked quite painful.
Yeah, it's cool. Mm.
I think John Levine. Yeah, I think John Levine likes a bit of like throwing himself around and being a bit of a hero.
Mm.
Yeah,
in that. So he's well up for it. And then is it Croesus, the high priest of the Temple of Poseidon, is there?
That's him.
And the master gives the master his seal, which then means that he can control Kronos.
Which he clearly can.
It's like
bringing a puppy home from Battersea and just he's pissing and shitting everywhere. And the master's like, I don't know what to do at all. It's shrieking. It looks half origami, half mattress. And it's just going, Master's like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Oh, here's this here. Twig. With this twig, you can control a tiger that I've got in my van.
Yeah, the
Down boy!
His plan is to just lock Kronos, who can eat time, in an office.
Has Kronos come yet? Have we got Kronos in the room yet?
I think Kronos has arrived.
It reminded me of that. Here. There was a viral video of some Irish people who had a bat in their living room. It just reminded me of that. They're like, Jerry, get Kronos out with it. Jerry, get Kronos. Because it's literally... It's almost like someone is drunk working a Peter Pan show and Peter Pan's being flung from one side of the stage. It's this eagle thing with white skin just kind of going, ah! Just getting flung in circles around a room.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really distressing.
Horrible. Yeah, just open the window.
It's like they haven't got the budget to make it look good, so they've overcome that just with sheer enthusiasm of this person screaming and flapping on a string.
Yeah.
Yeah, what they've done is they've made sure you can never get a clear look at it for more than a second.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And they just do the camera in and out, in and out, in and out, and just shriek over the whole thing.
And cut to shocked faces going, Kronos.
Which, to be fair, you would be. It's just horrible.
Roger, listen carefully. There's two bumper episodes coming out, but that's just the hors d'oeuvre. There's eight more, Roger. Eight of them. People might hear them, Roger. I'm going to lie low. I think you should too.
Brian and Roger are back. Two brand new episodes and a whole new series, wherever you get your podcasts. And see Brian and Roger live at the London Podcast Festival and the Menier Chocolate Factory in a whole new stage show. Check websites for ticket details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everything slows down again. Always fun.
Brilliant.
Oh, the Brigadier does his Baywatch running.
Yeah.
And doesn't the Doctor like basically do like a Quicksilver and just like takes them all back to Bessie? He goes and like fetches them all and puts them all back.
I think they fun. Did they shoot it backwards because the Doctor gets them and then they kind of run backwards towards Bessie, I think.
Oh, right. Interesting.
Maybe. You can probably see the sweat running back up his forehead.
Yeah.
everything is slowed down. Then we meet Dalios, who is Campo in Planet of the Spiders. I'm trying to. So this is where I lose track of what the Master is trying to achieve. Because he's got the crystal, but the crystal is the same as the crystal from Atlantis. Is it the same one, but it's in a different place or something? And that's
it's
how he's
something
gonna...
like it's in a it's in a different dimension, or it's not linked up harmonically, or something.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a reason, but again, once again, the Master has no idea what he's doing.
No. This is the point where I started to think with some of these six passes, and I think this is a very good example of it, that they feel like three stories they've mashed together.
Yes. Yeah.
Because you get the unit stuff, then you flick to this Atlantean stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just kind of, you think, well, this has no bearing on what's happened before.
None of it
all.
Really connects.
Yeah.
Well, no, because they're still outside the Newton Institute, frozen, aren't they? Just
So
then the Doctor, having unfrozen everyone, and what's his name, has got young again.
Stew. Yeah.
Stew has got youthful again, so that had no bearing on anything, him being old for a bit. He decides to make one of his little gizmos, which... it doesn't look like anything, does it? It looks like he's just cobbled together bits from a kitchen.
Mm.
And doesn't now the Master spend more time panicking about the fact that the Doctor and UNIT are all around him?
Yeah.
Now he decides to just do a series of parlor tricks that are just all more pathetic than the last.
Is it like, when he brings a jousting knight to face a van?
Yeah. Just,
why a jousting knight? I mean,
I think the van should just run it over.
Yeah. Absolutely, just destroy that. Just make it turn it into like a red mist. It could easily do.
And then you've got like loads of people with cannons.
Yes, are they roundheads?
Yeah,
cannons. Like, you're the Master. Why don't you summon the Solarians or something, or do something really freaky? But no, I'm gonna get them with some medieval based stuff at the to begin with. I'm gonna scare them with the Middle Ages. Yeah, a group of arseholes doing a reenactment in the next field.
Like I said, no, we have to do it chronologically or not at all.
Yes. He is a stickler for that sort of thing, isn't he, the Master?
Oh my god.
I mean, at best, everyone in UNIT's just like, oh, fuck off, guys. Like, no one's bothered or like hindered by that.
No.
And all the people in UNIT are like, it's horrible. I just had to shoot a horse. I'm not happy about that. I've got really weird feelings about that. There's a guy loading a cannon. Obviously,
everyone just like turns up really like freaked out. Cause, like, I mean, we had to kill them because they were trying to kill us. But it was really easy and horrible.
I'm not happy about it at all. I mean, we massacred them. It was then we had some Studio 54 guys on roller skates being gay heroes. I mean, I slit their throats. I feel really bad about that.
I ran over the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah.
When the Harlem Globetrotters came in, you know, whistling with their bomb balls. Yeah. I mean, I just locked their fucking kneecaps off. It was horrible.
I just shot Buster Keaton in the face.
I will admit their very last one, the Savile, that was disappointing. Yeah. I have to say,
that's satisfying.
When he came in on that massive hover chair jangling his jewelry. Still, anyway, we gassed him.
Yeah. So there they do. So UNIT have just finished, you know, 5 rounds rapid into Marilyn Monroe, and then the final one is a
I mean, luckily it
Happy
turned
birthday,
out
Mr.
Luckily, it turned out the guy I reversed was Dr. Crippen, so it's fine.
Oh, my God. And then there's a doodlebug. There's a doodlebug, and that blows up some of UNIT.
Oh,
are
God.
Are they dead? Yeah. None of them are dead. Piloted
by Rose West.
Yeah. And that's the cliffhanger as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Are they going to survive? And then the reprise is, everyone's fine.
Yeah, fine.
They missed.
Yates is all fucked up. He doesn't look very happy, does he?
No.
No.
And he is a bit, because Stu talks about how the Doctor likes playing his James Bond game. Mm. And I was like, well, that's canon now that the James Bond can't be a Time Lord because he's been mentioned in Doctor Who. So that's quite interesting.
Yes, that's right.
Unless he was another Time Lord.
Oh, hello. Oh, well, yeah. Well, you mean like... Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
God, imagine that. Hang on. Mm-hmm. So, at the end of Doctor Who, it might say, Doctor Who will return, and Doctor No.
Yeah.
The spy who loved Tom Tit.
Yeah. And like Michael Gray just like graffitis it going, Doctor Who will not return.
So basically there's been carnage, and the poor old TARDIS is looking battered. Yeah. I didn't like that at all.
It's
side.
A good TARDIS, this one, but it's very looking very
lovely
sorry,
TARDIS,
isn't it?
Looking very sorry for itself. All
can we talk about the? I mean, we're not there yet, but the TARDIS interior.
We can talk about the TARDIS interior. We're getting there, aren't we? Because we're going to the Master's TARDIS.
This was literally like a one-off.
Mm-hmm.
They built this new TARDIS interior that looks like it's come from Rowan and Martin's Laughing. Like you expect Goldie Hawn to come out of one of the roundrels and go, suck it to me.
I've just regenerated.
I'd give it 5 minutes. No, that's not it. But apparently, was it Barry Letts was so upset with it?
That he destroyed it. Was
it's intimated
it was destroyed.
He destroyed it. It was destroyed after this episode was filmed. So they had to go make a new one. That sounds like he... got it smashed up.
He really does.
I'm going to be honest, I didn't mind it that much.
I didn't mind it, although it did look a bit like a laundrette.
I know.
Yeah, with the weird sort of the huge roundels.
Yeah, and then you see the Master's TARDIS and you go, see, he's got the fucking bee's knees model again.
It's always the best one, isn't it?
It's like how the Nazis have good uniforms.
Yeah. The Master's TARDIS looks like the inside of a Dalek. Like, you know, they've got the knobbly bits going out. That's what the viewpoint would be from inside the Dalek, looking at it.
They should have had it where they lift up the Dalek's head at the end and the Master's TARDIS is in it. Like him.
Yeah. The master's really small.
You will obey me!
Well, this is, like, I don't mind this. Obviously, like you were saying about this being, like, lots of episodes are, like, cobbled together, different episodes. This one is, then we just got, like, a whole episode which is a bit of, like, TARDIS shenanigans. Mm. Because first
I quite
of all,
like TARDIS shenanigans because it's a bit of a mind, like,
yeah.
The TARDIS is in the TARDIS, which is also in the TARDIS, which is in the TARDIS. I really like that a lot, them running out the doors, them being inside each other's TARDISes all the time.
Also,
that was my favourite bit.
We've got good Doctor and Joe relations in this one as well, I like.
Yeah, he's not trying to kill her.
No,
he
makes him laugh quite a few times. And when he's going TARDIS, 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 he's like, Joe, come and look at this.
Yeah.
And they go through, and then he goes, come and look at this. And they go through again. And it's like, oh, that's fun.
It's quite fun, isn't it? Mm. And then he's trying to get the master. Basically, what we have over a part of this is sort of a Zoom call, isn't it? It's a weird Zoom call between the Doctor and the Master, where the Master puts him on mute and he gets angry. Mm. And then the Doctor pretends to talk backwards. Which is it's a fun bit of Pertwee gobbledygook, which we always enjoy.
He loves it.
Yep. Any excuse to just be weird, he'll always jump on it.
Yeah.
Who was that guy? Who was the guy who spoke like, oh, the noodly noo and
Stanley
all that?
Professor Stanley Unwin.
Professor Stanley Unwin.
Yeah. Who was? He'd have been a good Baker era Who villain.
Yeah, that'd be really fun. Mm.
He would have made the worst James Bond villain.
Oh, yeah.
Don't toe on the no-no.
Dr. Onio.
So you expect me to talk? No, but James Bond, you Rono, expected to talk. What? But I genuinely love the TARDIS landing in the TARDIS and then them being perpetually trapped in this weird loop.
Yeah.
I very much went, oh, God, that could just be a whole story, which, again, lends credence to what John's saying. There are three separate stories.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of used again in Legopolis, but the difference is that John Pertwee's enjoying being in this story, whereas Tom Baker in Legopolis
isn't.
Yeah. It's having a miserable old time. So then at the end of episode 4, the TARDIS is split in space. They split it, and the Doctor is lost in some kind of Neverworld a bit like we were saying before we went on air, a bit like Captain Jack Sparrow when he's in that weird flat salt plane thing where a ship moves around on crabs. He's like that. He's in the lost sort of nowhere time.
I mean, the booze is closed at 3:30.
Yeah.
It's the Master that's done it. He's separated the TARDISes, isn't he? The TARDIS eyes.
Yes.
Not a terrible effect.
TARDIS eyes. No, it's quite a good effect.
It's great.
TARDIS. Yeah, I don't know what the plural is, but it's quite good.
I like that bit.
And says goodbye, Miss Grant. Which is rather nice.
Yeah.
Doesn't the Master call her stupid?
Oh, does he call her stupid?
I think he calls Joe stupid.
But for Joe, that's a walk in the park compared to the expletives that's been shot over via the side over the years. That's nothing.
Bear in mind, episode 1, she's just delighted not to have been thrown through a windscreen. Like, the standards are low.
But don't worry, because in episode 5, all is well. Even though the TARDIS is split and the Doctor's gone because he's lost in the time vortex, but then he contacts Joe somehow via...
Yeah.
I don't know how he does that.
He sort of he just whispers to her, doesn't he? He sends her like a nuisance phone call.
Yeah.
He Obi-Wans her.
Oh, yes.
Yes, I suppose that's exactly what he does, yeah.
And then she presses this like emergency button, and then he arrives all sort of sat down and all curled up in the TARDIS.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which is fun, which is a lot of fun.
That's all right, yeah, I don't mind that.
No, it's fine.
Yeah. For me now, this is where the story falls off a cliff.
Yes.
Into the sea and into Atlantis.
Yeah. because now we're in Atlantis and it all gets a bit, it's sort of sub I Claudius nonsense, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
To the point where Joe is given an I Claudius wig and costume.
Yeah.
And they are knocking about.
It's men in eyeliner going, have a care, sir, and all this stuff.
Yes, it's now turned from the first 4 episodes, which was very much Confessions of a Time Lord, and now it's descending into what, Pompeii? Mm.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Basically.
The prologue.
Tom Chitch?
Yeah.
Oh, the master. Oh. More like the mistress. Oh. Because it's all, it's all, yeah, don't. There's level that Pertwee looking at the camera. Oh, don't, no.
Because, yeah, we have to have this, like, long meeting, this long council meeting, don't we?
Oh, God.
Where everyone's sort of talking in very sort of cod Shakespearean, and Ingrid Pitt is sort of struggling with a black cat that she's clearly not happy holding, and Poppy was really miserable.
You can really tell that they've shoved a bit of Whiskers cat food in on her hand.
Yeah.
This is fucking miserable, this is.
Yeah.
And then there's lots of, we in the city of Atlantis like to do things like this. We don't agree. Well, okay, then let's talk about it for another 4 years.
Yeah. Because, like, okay, a lot of these characters, we're in episode 5 and we've not met any of them yet, so we don't really care that much.
It's really hard to be vested in them. And also, as soon as the master turns up, Ingrid Pitt's like, oh, wouldn't mind a bit of that.
Oh my goodness.
It really is a carry-on film now. She's immediately like, oh, blimey, look at him.
What is it? He has the bearing of a god. She's like, blimey. Have I mentioned at this point, has this happened yet? Benton's a baby. Anyway, that just happened at some point.
Yeah,
that
suddenly happens, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another side effect when they were trying to summon the Kronos for the second time.
Yes.
The first time, poor old thing, he got turned old, and there were lots of other things going on. And the second time, Benton gets turned into a baby. But it's fine, because that's still in England, in the Newton Institute, so we don't need to worry about that at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, and we won't check in with them for another episode and a half, so that's all good.
No, we're fine.
So like you say, Ingrid Pitt says here that immediately fancies the master, and then starts a bit of like politicking where the master's trying to off Dalios, her very old sort of husband.
Which is brilliant, because now if you think about the master's raison d'etre all the time, he spends a lot of time on the planet Earth spending months getting ready for his
needs. Yeah, yeah.
That always go to pot.
Yeah.
Then he turns up to Atlantis and goes, I'm going to be the king. And everyone goes, all right.
Yeah, that works, sure.
He's already done it in Planet of Fire. I'm also the god. And everyone goes, all right. So the master could go two ways. He could spend months and months with strategic planning, or just turn up on a whim and just go, I'm the king of Court Caractica, as I am. And everyone goes, all right, fuck it, you are.
I love the idea he spends months in Devil's End with like all these parishioners being Story Vicar, and he spends no time in here when everyone's really like, everyone's so horny. That scene between him and Ingrid Pitt is one of the horniest scenes in all Doctor Who, isn't it?
It's absolute filth for Doctor Who.
I wonder if you got in the book.
Oh.
She's the bloody front cover, mate.
Yeah.
Ingrid's Pitt.
He had to re-laminate the binder when she went in.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't know what that means.
No.
but our minds did.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Joe, throughout all this, he's you obligatory have to get changed now, Joe. And
yes,
also, also, we might tie you up in a bit if you don't mind. okay. Yeah. Fine.
Sure.
I think.
They sort of work out what the master's up to, and they want to protect Dalia. So they follow him or someone, because someone's going to be sent to be basically killed by the Minotaur. Because there's also the Minotaur here.
Oh, God. God.
I know.
Why is there a Minotaur in Atlantis?
No, I don't know. So that's the end of episode 5. By the way, does anyone know who played the Minotaur?
David Prowse.
Yes, David Prowse.
Yeah.
And he throws a man through a mirror window.
Yeah.
That's quite good, that bit. Yeah. Oh, so you were never Minotaur in Atlantis. He get his hooves wet.
Yeah.
Minotaurs can't swim. They're all weighed down by their head.
Exactly. He died immediately.
Maybe that's how he got there. They threw him in the water and he landed in Atlantis.
All makes perfect sense. Mm. Put that into your next fucking program, Panorama.
Yeah, it's all makes. And then, luckily, thank goodness, the Minotaur, after throwing someone through a mirror, then just runs through solid stone, which is
solid stone. Yeah. Providing an escape route.
This is when you know it's a six-parter when there's a fucking Minotaur in it for no reason that does nothing.
Yeah. It provides a cliffhanger and then just leaves.
Yeah.
I think that's the weird thing. At this stage in episode five, you're going, who else are you going to now throw into the mix? Like, suddenly, for no reason, suddenly, I'm Robin Hood! Like, what? Why is Robin Hood in Atlantis as well?
Ooh, oh, I'm Robin Williams.
Good morning, Atlantis! Everyone's standing on a plinth going, "My captain, my captain." We don't want that.
I mean, we've had Robin Asquith, so maybe there's a link.
Yeah. Comes together. And then he like goes up to the Minotaur and starts doing his like camp hairdresser character, being like, "Oh my god, where did you get? Where are you going for your holidays?
God. Oh my god, you've got the horn!" Yeah.
Why didn't the Doctor do his Venu? Didn't bother here, did he?
No, he did a bit of bullfighting.
Yeah, he did. Oh, he does bullfighting. That's amazing. Yeah. That's
hilarious. But they did that in Horns and Nymon.
I know.
Yeah.
I know this was first, but come on, why is there a Minotaur in this?
It doesn't, because they had time to film.
If you know why there's a Minotaur in this, please don't write to us. We don't.
Well, what? Because the writer, what the writer has done very skillfully, John, is he's taken the sort of Greek mythology and then he's twinned it with bullshit.
Yes, that's probably what it is.
You see,
yeah,
and
Clearly, it's like filler because not only that, then the Doctor and Joe are captured, and then we get treated to quite a long monologue from John Pertwee.
Which, oh my god, I mean, is this the story, the childhood story?
Yeah.
The Daisiest Daisy or whatever
the Daisiest Daisy and the Rockiest Rock. Yeah. I guess, but it's not an episode six thing, is it? Like, no. In episode six, you want to be ramping up and trying to do stuff, but this is.
And also, if I was Joe, I'd be going, "Doctor, there really is no fucking time for this." This is the worst time for you to tell me this story.
I mean, at this point, I'm starting to think if maybe the Doctor is the time monster.
Doctor, you really should have told me the story when we were on Fast Forward Bessie, because I could only fucking hope the story went quick. Wonderful.
I love that bit when he keeps on going like, "What did he say, Doctor?" And he's like, "I'm getting to that, Joe." And he's like, "But what did he say, Doctor?" "I'm getting to that, Joe." "But Doctor, what did he say?"
Slap.
"I'm getting to it.
I'm getting to that, bitch."
"Well, Larry, the fuck up, you mop-eared twat."
Yeah. Then they all go to the council again because Dalios has died.
They have to.
Why not? We're in episode fucking six.
No, but they all get chained up now, so that at least there's some semblance of peril now.
Yes, they all look like Princess Leia, don't they, to keep with the Star Wars connection.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah, John looks nice in his metallic bikini.
Yeah. And Joe's like the little, what's his name? Salacious Crumb, the little. Yeah. He's down there.
A little short for a Minotaur.
Yeah. And so then, weirdly, they just go, "Oh, you know, Dalios is dead." And then Ingrid Pitt's really upset. And she's like, "Oh, you killed Dalios." And then the master's
you
like, "Oh,
Dalios,
yeah.
You're a rotter."
Yeah. Which is like, how is that ever going to work? Of course they're going to tell her that.
How are his Midnight Runners?
So then they both get in the TARDIS, but then the Doctor says he's going to do something which is always a risk when two TARDISes are in one another, which is time ram
with your cock instrument in the tom tit. I mean, there's nothing more exciting than this.
And the Master, does the Master just shout, he goes like, "Time ram," and then the Master looks at his dials and goes, "Fuck."
Doesn't he say something like, "You wouldn't dare"?
You wouldn't dare.
At least buy me dinner first.
Yeah. So they end up in a time beyond time, which is a blue screen studio.
Yeah.
And then we meet the actual Kronos, who isn't someone on a string flapping their wings, but is a lovely lady.
Lovely lady.
It's a big, big lady's head.
Also, we forgot to mention that the Master's TARDIS is a computer bank from the 1960s.
Yes, of course.
Plates on it and stuff.
Blended very seamlessly strange. into the Newton Institute. I mean, if he went just outside the window, he'd be a window cleaner.
He has to step out of a ladder.
he'd be the bucket.
Yeah. He has to stand in a bucket.
come out of his TARDIS covered in suds.
Yeah.
And then go down like he's going downstairs behind a counter.
Yeah.
Imagine if his TARDIS was Stew. Imagine if all the time he was just like... Stew just got really upset and then the Master crawled out of him.
He has to climb out of Stew's arsehole.
Yeah. So Kronos says, "You've saved me." And so they say, "I will grant you anything." And then the Master debases himself by just begging to be set free.
Begging.
Probably begs. He's like, "I'll never do it again, Doctor. I'm so sorry." So the Doctor frees him. And the Master just immediately betrays him.
And runs
off. Brilliant.
Yeah. He just like punches him and then runs away. It's amazing.
And then he says to Kronos, well, he ran away. And she goes, well, you wanted him to have free will and he's got it. So
yeah, you know what he's like. Yeah. You know that was what was going
to
happen.
I wanted to kill him.
Yeah.
What is it with you two? You don't come here for the
room.
Hunting.
Get a room.
And so then, then they arrive back at the Newton Institute. Everything's been fixed. Everything's back to normal. And little baby Benton has become adult Benton, who gives everyone a weird look and is naked, and everyone laughs. The end.
Yeah. Well.
Well.
So
I'm going to give...
Before we go into anything else, Tom, what happened in this story?
Lots and lots of things.
A lot
happened.
Of things happened, didn't it?
Well, yeah.
I'll give you a précis. Basically, nothing happened over six episodes.
It's utterly
but it was really
astonishing.
Good fun.
Yeah, it was good
it
fun.
Was,
yeah.
Oh, loads of like entertaining things happened, and it was yeah, but it just doesn't cohere really. It's very strange. John, I'll give you an edit point now because I'm not sure this isn't. It's funny that he said it, but it's not about a funny thing. Okay. Have you heard what John Levine says on the commentary for The Time Monster?
I have not.
So this is his comment on Baby Benton. It says, we're coming up to the scene where I turn into a baby. This is a slightly sad bit of narrative. The baby was played by Darren Platt, and he died before his first birthday. Oh. But he's in a peaceful place now, and at least he ended up in Doctor Who. Oh, what is that as a piece of commentary? That
I'm
is
not editing that.
God.
I'll tell you why, because someone mentions it in correspondence, that's why.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, okay, well, I'm not laughing at the tragedy. It's more John Levine not realising that's a really weird thing to say in a comic.
It's just horrible, and the woman who played the doctor, she got spina bifida in the...
What a fun little anecdote.
Window cleaner, he had blood clot and died on an episode of Why Don't You? Anyway, just stop it! Stop with the doom!
It's so weird.
We need to score it, and I'm suggesting that we score it out of Baby Benton's.
Baby Benton's, of course.
Yeah.
Baby Benton's, cock-shaped, whatever they are, or Tom Tits. I mean,
it's
got to be Tom Tits, hasn't it?
Tom Tits. Yeah. Hang on. So are we scoring it? Does it need to be divisible by two, or can we just do it's Tom Tits, but each it can just be the normal amount, right?
Out of 100 Tom Tits.
Out of 100 Tom Tits. Yeah. Okay. Oh. I'll go first.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say it's mad, but it's one of those Doctor Who stories that while being mad, is mad because it throws everything at you.
Mm.
Yeah.
There are roundheads, there's a doodle bug, there's a minotaur, a man gets old and then young again, and a man's a baby and then he's not again. Like, there's loads of stuff happening, so it is fun to watch.
Yeah.
And it cracks along. So I'm not going to be too harsh on it. I think I'm going to give it 70 Tom Tits.
Mm. That's a nice score. Mm. That's a nice score. Okay, pretty much what echoing Tom... it's a six-parter, but it rollicks along and it felt like a four to me. It's really good fun. It throws everything at the ceiling and then throws everything at the wall.
Mm.
And then just literally peels it off and throws it again. There's so much going on. You've got the Master in it, you've got time travel, you've got Atlantis, you've got Minotaurs, it's just endless. I didn't really know what was going on, but it was really filthy, it was really silly, and occasionally it was really brilliant. That's what I really like. Occasionally it's really good. And I'm like, the stuff where they're all frozen is really good fun. Mm. The idea of the Master trying to kill them from nefarious means is really fun, but it just starts off too silly. And then you go, just go straight away with the doodlebug dropping a bomb. Just do that immediately. You don't have to go. So there's so much to laugh about it, but I'd rather do that than just sit through it like, oh God, this is so boring and trad. Mm. This wasn't trad. This was just insane. This was just, this is three stories being thrown into one, pot. So I'm going to give it 72. I loved it. Ooh. I thought it was such good fun.
Nice.
Okay. Well, I really enjoyed it. It's a mess. It reminded me of a Hartnell six-parter.
Right.
We had lots of ideas that don't really work together, but we're just going to push them together anyway and work it out at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's brilliant. John and Katie are brilliant in it.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Delgado's Master. I could watch him in anything. And the mad stuff just made it more fun. It was very of its era. I love this unit era. It's so fun.
Yeah.
The Doctor plays so well off the Brigadier. He plays so well off Joe and everyone. So I'm going to give it 75.
Whoa! So that is 217. Once again, a bit like a mind warp. That's probably higher than a lot of people thought we'd go. It's fun to watch, and it really cracked along. So no, I agree with that. I think that's really fun.
Absolutely. And the other thing that I think really makes it so much fun is in the first episode, John Pertwee has clearly had a hairstylist do something slightly different to his bonds.
Yes,
because his hair looks like Magneto's helmet.
Mm. He's kind of been feathered into. He looks like the bird person from Rick and Morty.
Yeah, he looks like he's been feathered. Yeah, yeah. Yes, and it's like, wow, that's an interesting look. I mean, by episode 5, that's all sagged and it's looking a bit shit again. There's so much to enjoy with that. It's a kaleidoscope of madness, isn't it?
Yeah, it's exactly what we love Who for. Just being brave, because it written down, it's bollocks, but played out, it works so well because it's got that lovely charm to it.
Yeah.
There must have been a point where they were hiring a man who can ride a horse and a costume for a knight, and they'd been like, "How long is this? So is this all about being in a knight?" Like, no, this will be on screen for 14 seconds. Okay.
Also, is the Time Master supposed to be Kronos? Because that's not really established either, is it?
No, you're never quite sure. Is the master the time monster? Because in the end, Kronos is nice, so it doesn't really make sense.
The only thing I can presume is that she's Hattie Jakes and that's her budgie. Yeah. Maybe that's just there.
That makes sense.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, correspondence. Becky says the time monster is an absolute brilliant mess. It has a monster that looks like a collaboration between Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen and Pan's People. Andrew F says the IMDb trivia for the monster Time Monster isn't saying Barry Letts went on the new TARDIS set with a sledgehammer when everyone went home at the end of the filming, but as we mentioned before. I'll just go through Time Monster. Greg Newport, he's giving us the Radio Times 10th anniversary special synopsis, which is basically what Paul read out earlier, so thank you for that.
Does it stop dead halfway through? Because if not, then we're not interested.
No. I'll tell you what it says. It says Professor Thaskales, the Master, is working on Tom Tit, the transmission of matter through interstitial time. The Doctor discovers his aims and goes through time to Atlantis to steal the crystal of Kronos. Doctor Who tries to foil him, but the Master evokes a fury of Kronos and Atlantis is destroyed.
Is that? I
gave
guess
it all away.
Yeah. Come on.
Gave it all away. Come on.
Martin says Time Monster, in the guise of Pref Misogynous, the Master's crystal math leads to an outbreak of Kronos fatigue syndrome. Overacting priests, a Minotaur on Atlantis, and a hirsute stew questioning the maxim once a man, twice a child by having an age crisis.
There you go.
You should write for Radio Times.
That's quite cryptic, that one. I feel like I should try and fill in a crossword after that.
Yeah, you can be five across. Chris Williams says, a Time Monster, absolute cobblers, but how can you not have fun watching a TARDIS within a TARDIS game of chicken? Brigadier slow-mo acting, Joe's instantly growing hair, must be like a Play-Doh barbershop, Benton in a nappy, an old stew shouting, Kronos! That's almost as terrifying as the creature itself that attacks with the ferocity of Frank Spencer at a Nativity.
He does look like when he's hanging from the thing. It really looks like that.
Kronos!
Do not blaspheme the Nemon. Says, all I remember about the Time Monster was Roger Delgado having a sneaky peek at Ingrid Pitt's cleavage. Maybe there was a Delgado's Book of Cleavage. Ben Thomas says, the Time Monster, oddly watchable in a coachload of nuns crashing into an orphanage kind of way.
Yes.
It starts with Roger Delgado destroying Anglo-Greek relations with his accent and ends with Sergeant Benton in a nappy. They don't write them like that anymore. And then Ben, touching on what you mentioned earlier, Ben says, according to John Levine in the DVD commentary, the baby that portrayed Benton's infant alter ego sadly didn't live to see his first birthday. Fucking hell, John, it's a DVD commentary. Read the fucking room, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, that was a bit much.
I didn't see any more. But Peter Nimmo says, watch the Time Monster a few weeks ago. Hello, Peter. Thanks for your nice retweets and things to say about the episode. I can't speak. I've drank wine. Peter Nemo says, watch the Time Monster a few weeks ago and now I've completely forgotten what it was all about. That essentially is basically
that's
what happened.
That's the joy of it, yeah.
And that is all the correspondence for this week. Yay! But as Tom mentioned at the beginning, I want to reiterate that we will be at King's Place for the London Podcast Festival on September 2nd at 9:00. Go to kingsplace.co.uk, I think it is.
Yes.
Are we definitely
correct.
9 o'clock? No, keep
I tell a lie, we're on at 9:30.
9:30, Tom's right.
9:30, sorry, Tom. Sorry, everybody listening. Yeah, we're on at 9:30, we're off at 11. We've got an hour and a half.
Yay! So
we're going to do
go
that
the
some
pub
bits.
After.
We're going to the pub mm-hmm. after. Lovely bad. We're going to do some bits and pieces. We're going to do some bits and pieces at the beginning. And at the end, we're planning to have a lovely live correspondence.
Yes!
Brilliant. You can tell us your points of view.
On yes, Sylvan Nemesis.
On Sylvan Nemesis. That is what we are doing.
Yeah.
It's a good one. There's loads to talk about with Sylvan Nemesis.
Yeah, it's going
to
be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Or Sylv's Nemesis, a.k.a. Michael Grade. Hmm?
Oh, he went there. He went there.
He went there.
But I'm going to let Tom do the end because I've taken over.
Follow us at WheezingPod on Twitter. And until next time, keep wheezing and groaning.
Couldn't have said it better.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
My grandfather's clock was too large for the shelf, so it stood 90 years on the floor. It was taller by half than the old man himself, though it weighed not a penny weight more. It was bought on the morn of the day that he was born, and was always his treasure and pride. But it stopped short, never to go again, when the old man died. 90 years without slumbering, tick-tock, tick-tock, his life seconds numbering. Tick-tock, tick-tock, it stopped short, never to go again, when the old man died. In watching its pendulum swing to...
Hello, I'm Tom, and I make a podcast where I log in to celebrities' Amazon accounts. It's called...
What a brilliant idea for a pod. There's no original pods out there anymore, but this genuinely is.
Oh, thanks, Ben Bailey-Smith. Anyway, it's called...
This is good, isn't it? It's clever, this podcast. You should do more.
Thanks, Kerry Godleyman. It's called...
This is such a great idea, by the way. What great podcast.
Shappy Corsander, you're too kind. The podcast is
but
called...
It's biographical. You can get all sorts of information out of people. This is a very good idea.
Thank you, Nick Helm. It's called My Mate Bought a Toaster.
I'm going to listen to this podcast.
Thanks, Alex Horn. Can you tell your friends?